a big hello and welcome to you all. It's great to see you. Many of you I know, and many I do not know, but you know, there is some solace in the fact that I am confident that we're going to have a net gain this weekend because of who is sitting in the pews, not so much who is standing in front of them, because right in the pews is so much experience. The Spirit of God is in you. There's so many wonderful things to share one with another that I am confident that you're in for a blessing for that reason. But nevertheless, here we go with the topic, and we do pray and trust the Spirit in that as well. There is a question being asked, and I think being posed more in the last couple of years than has been posed in 100. And a question I think we need to think about, and that is, what is traditional marriage? Now, you know why this question is in the forefront of our culture, in the forefront of our headlines and our news, because of the time and the day in which we live. But I want to bring it to your attention that this question has not been asked very much for a long time. It's recent. And at the core of that question is, what are the ideals of marriage? What are the nuts and bolts of marriage? What is the framework of marriage? What is the structure of marriage? What is the principles by which marriage is built on? What are the objectives of marriage by which we evaluate it? What are the motivators of marriage for which we go into it? All of those questions lie at the center of what we mean by marriage, and they are all up for grabs. There's a radical departure from the idyllic Leave It to Beaver 1950s TV show marriage, right? Where you have a loving husband who works hard to support a loving and submissive wife at home, who works hard to care for somewhat submissive children, right? It's not a marriage that's unfamiliar to probably all of us in some way or fashion. Man, woman, monogamous, loving, roles, faith. It was all clear 2 decades ago. It was all very clear. And not so much today. The culture, researchers are taking this question on head on. They're asking, what are the ideals of a successful marriage? Eli Finkel is a researcher who writes in his book, The All or Nothing Marriages, how the best marriages work. And he's looking at that today. 2018, what are the best marriages? And what is he finding? He's asserting that the Leave It to Beaver marriages are not the most successful marriages today. Historians are picking up the question as well. They address the question of traditional marriage as a very simple one. You simply need to go predate 1950 and continue to predate that to find what traditional means. And that's what they've done. Melvin Bragg in the well-known BBC is basically collating what historians are saying about marriage. And guess what? It's thousands of years of marriage predate Leave It to Beaver. And many of these examples seriously threaten what we mean by traditional. The cultural pundits are anxious to talk to this as well, to debate it, to settle it, right? What is the real definition of traditional marriage? This article in the Huffington Post, dated June 26, 2016, which you can imagine what instigated that. They're a little bit more pointed in their conclusions, a little bit more antagonistic. They're mostly saying, take that, Christians, on what you think traditional marriage means. I feel like we have a generation that needs to come face to face with this question, and it's a question that hasn't been asked in previous generations because it didn't need to. The culture makes surprising and very persuasive claims about the ideals of marriage. They are surprising because they turn upside down some of the things that we've held dear. And they're persuasive because they strike very near to our experience. And we track with it in a number of different levels, for good or for bad. They would say that marriages, hundreds of years ago, marriages were built on the ideals of needs. And society gave rise to marriage. What was legitimate children and illegitimate children going to be defined as? How was royal blood going to be passed down? How was property going to be preserved? How are we going to protect ourselves? And protection was very much in the context of a team, being on a team. And the very nucleus of that team was a family. It was very safe to be a wife. And it was very safe to have a wife. To divorce meant you were going into a more scary world. Then pundits and historians say that the ideals of marriage morphed when that basic structure was being changed, and it became about love, falling in love, staying in love. This became the mainstay of marriage. This was the reason for marriage. Haven't you read Romeo and Juliet or Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, where we throw off the cultural norms for love? And who is it to say I can't marry the person I want to, or I've fallen in love with? Hollywood has picked up on this motif, right? And we have throughout their storytelling as well, the importance of romantic love, being ravished, being drawn to. And we can see then that just as somebody falls into love, some would claim you can fall out of it. And we can see where we've come and how we've gotten there. What's especially insightful, I think, is to realize that in 2018, there's different ideals. Sure, there's the ideal of needs being met and love being central, but there's a new ideal. And this ideal will be foreign, perhaps, to just a generation past. But it's very present in ours, in the current generation, the younger generation. And that is self-actualization. The ideal that I need to make you the best you, and you need to make me the best me. And that's a part of the marriage deal. We have for the very first time, and maybe you've heard it, we have for the very first time people not using the divorce word, but using the uncoupling word. We're uncoupling. You see, my trajectory is different than her trajectory, and who am I to say her trajectory should be my trajectory, and who is she to say mine should be hers? And so it's just best if we go our separate ways. Does that ring true? Do you hear this? Do you feel this? This, to paint this picture and to help understand this ideal, I have to give the most classic example, and that is actually an example of a Hungarian couple, married couple. Hosu, I think, is her name. Hosu is a world-acclaimed swimmer. She's won world awards. And Tusup is her husband, and he is her coach. Both husband and coach. And this particular pair has caused quite a few eyebrow raising in the practice pool because Tusup berates her and screams at her and scolds her and throws things around when she doesn't do what she should do in the pool. People have come uncomfortable with this. After all, that's not how husbands should treat wives. But Tusup would say that if I love my wife, I will make her the very, very best swimmer. Can you taste it? This is the time that we live. It's not only love. It's self-actualization. You the best that you can be. Me the best that I can be. And we work on this. Now, that's really just raw facts. It's the ideals of our marital culture today, okay? So let's take a line out of the historian's playbook and say, let's go to deep history. Let's go to deep history. If we want to see the nuts and bolts of marriage, let's go to deep history and see what it has. And we know what deep history says in Genesis, that God created, he created a garden, and in that garden he placed a man, Adam. And then he did the most mysterious thing, and he takes a rib out of Adam, and he makes a woman, and he brings her to Adam, and then says, Adam says, now this is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. What we see here is a rib being taken out of Adam and creation of a woman. And because of the creation of a woman, we have man leaving father and mother. Notice what we have here. We have a leaving of and a cleaving to. We have actually marriage defining society, not society defining marriage. We see in deep history that marriage actually comes from creation. Now, this is actually a very curious statement. And if you're confused and have a hard time connecting the dots between creation and marriage, you're not alone. The scribes and Pharisees had a trouble with that. In fact, they came to Jesus in Matthew 19, they came to Jesus and said, is it lawful for a man to put away his wife? And you know what Jesus quoted? He didn't quote all of the ideals that I would have quoted. He quotes that in creation, he created man and woman. You see, Jesus says, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and they will cleave to his wife. He, because of the way we were created. That marriage predates historic society. Marriage was created, not discovered, not created by man, but created by God. Furthermore, Jesus goes on to say, what God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Do you see the sovereignty that he places on marriage? Apart from culture, society, authority, what God has joined, let not man put it asunder. What we are dealing with here is we're dealing with something very divine. Divine beyond our knowing, beyond our understanding, beyond even connecting the dots. Something that was created. Now here's where it gets particularly interesting. Paul jumps and steps into this same narrative. He notices the same thing. In Ephesians 5, we read this. For we are members of his body and of his flesh and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. It's quoted verbatim. Paul was thinking about Genesis 2. But notice the Adam has changed. It's not the first Adam who gave his rib to create the wife, to make marriage. It's the second Adam who gave his body. Because we are members of his body and of his flesh and of his bones. Because the second Adam, Jesus, has given his flesh over on the cross, because of the gospel, we have marriage. That's as deep as I can go. I don't even get it. I can't even connect the dots on why. All I'm saying is, because of Jesus, you're here with your spouse. Because of the gospel, you are married. And this is a great mystery, and I'm glad he said that because I agree. I speak concerning Christ and the church. So, in conclusion, this weekend, be listening for the ideals of marriage. Listen for the ideals of marriage. We all come into marriage with the nuts and bolts in our heads thinking this is what the ideals are. This is what the this is what the principles are. This is what the objectives are. And some of them strike near to what our culture is saying. And that doesn't mean it's all bad. But let's remember that society, it's not society giving rise to marriage. No. But is God giving rise to marriage and society? That's what deep history tells us. And it's not love that's primarily a feeling, something in which you fall in and out of. But it's love that's primarily an action. In fact, love throughout the scriptures is always active. It's always active. So much so that Jesus says that that action is the sure tell sign. Doesn't he say, if you love me, you will keep my commandments? Love is active. The love in the gospel was active. Isn't that wonderful? And the love in marriage is active also. Be listening for that. No doubt that will be a part of the discussions and some of the things that we do and we talk about. And self-actualization, it's indeed present. It's becoming part of our psyche. But it's not being the best version of yourself, being the best version of me and making you the best version of you. It's about us becoming the best version and the best likeness to Christ. It's called the sanctification of our lives. And Jesus wants to use marriage to do that. After all, marriage comes from and out of the gospel. Him giving himself for us.